Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The estimated number of U.S. law enforcement officers who died by suicide outnumbered those who perished in the line of duty for the third straight year in 2018. It's a growing trend in police departments across the country, and the stigma surrounding it has only exacerbated the problem. Marla Friedman is a police psychologist. She's director of investigations and board chairman for Badge of Life. That's a nonprofit that offers police suicide statistics, training, and mental health program resources. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann. I really am so pleased that I could speak with you today.
Listeners, if you or someone you know is in crisis, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. The website is suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Police can text BLUE, B-L-U-E, or TALK to 741-741 to reach the crisis text line. Marla Friedman, the third straight year we've seen an increase in officer suicides, a number of suicides in excess of the numbers who perished in the line of duty. What do we know, if anything, about why this is happening?
Well, there's a couple of different issues here. So let me just start right off the bat. Badge of Life is the national leader in mental health and suicide prevention for law enforcement. We do training and education. And we are the only organization that did 6 years of research on the number of suicides nationally. However, this past year, we have discontinued those studies. What we found is, as an evidence-based organization, that those numbers were inaccurate. And we stopped putting those numbers out there based on that information.
Which numbers?
And the numbers of how many officers take their lives, we found that they were underreported to such a degree that the numbers that we were putting out were not accurate, and we were not comfortable putting that forth. So what we are hoping for at this point, a little bit different, we know there's a lot of organizations that are still counting those numbers and putting them out there. But Badge of Life is hoping for legislation which would mandate chiefs to report all officer deaths, regardless of cause, to a national database. Perhaps the CDC, you know, someone at the level where they could take those numbers and really pull some accurate information out. At this point, we felt we were doing a disservice to the officers and their families, putting out numbers that were incorrect. So at that point, if we could have that on board, not only would we find out about officer suicide, which we'll talk more about, but officers also have higher rates of cardiac incidents, 35% higher than the general population. There's a lot of issues that if we could find a government agency that could handle these numbers, we'd be rich with information. So the numbers that are frequently reported out there now are not accurate numbers. What we could comfortably say is that more officers still take their own lives than are killed on the street. And the term line of duty, we're a little careful about that because we feel that suicides for an officer may be line of duty death.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the general public doesn't understand that, but before an officer starts work, they go through extensive pre-employment testing, et cetera. So when they're first on board, these people are in good mental health. If you look at them 5 years later, 8 years, 10, 20, you see a change in their personality, in the way they cope, in the way they handle problems. You have to see that the career in itself can be damaging.
Hmm.
And so we're looking for the actual variables that may cause someone to go for suicide as a solution.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the issue of suicide among our law enforcement officers across the country. My guest is Marla Friedman. She's a police psychologist. She's also director of investigations and board chairman for Badge of Life. So you're saying that the numbers that are known are undercounted, so that it's a worse issue than what the numbers are telling.
I'm not saying it's a worse issue. What I'm saying is we have no idea. Okay. We don't know those numbers that are reported. The agencies out there that are pulling those, mm-hmm. they're taking them off of Facebook and newspapers, et cetera, so that the accuracy is just not there. There's no scientific method to it.
Surprising that there isn't a national database for this kind of an issue. What's been the reason? Has there been resistance to it? What do we know about that?
Yes. There is a national database that they're supposed to report in, but there's no mandatory reporting, and or if there is, it's not being done. So we're not ever clear on the actual number. So I do know one organization that we kind of have our eye on. It's called One Too Many, and what they're doing is, they are, yes, collecting information on officer suicides that they hear about, but rather than just putting the number out, they actually go forward and follow up on every particular case they get and to see what are those variables, in essence, the psychological autopsy. And this is a much richer way for us to understand in law enforcement what is going on and causing this. There's a lot of theories, you know, that it's either post-traumatic stress injury or other issues. And I think there's a lot of variables there that may be accurate, but we just don't know.
You mentioned that there, before they hit the streets, they're given very thorough, very extensive psychological testing to make sure that they're healthy when they start. I guess one of the issues is that attention to mental health isn't followed up throughout their careers.
Well, bingo, you got it right there. So what Badge of Life does is we train and educate. So we go across the country. I have a cadre of trainers that I can send out. We have a program called Building a Better Cop, and it's mental health and suicide prevention for law enforcement specifically. In fact, yesterday was the launch of a very extensive program with the Chicago Police Department. So we are hoping that we can have some amount of influence on departments that have no mental health programs or very slim programs.
How is that even possible that they have no mental health programs?
The stigma is so great because you have to think about it this way. You know, right in the academy, they're taught, you know, don't have feelings, don't react, suck it up. You're Superman, you're Superwoman. You can't react or you can't do your job. Don't be weak. Don't be passive. Don't cry. I mean, these are messages that have been with law enforcement from the beginning. And so to break those, you know, we have to fight really hard. Now, on the upside, we are seeing some of that loosen a little with the younger officers, because think about it. Some of them may have grown up and maybe their parents were in therapy. Mm-hmm.
Or they were.
ADD. Exactly. So we have not had that in the past. They're a little bit more open to going. And what we do to get them going, we start with what's called the mental health check-in, which is just a yearly check-in, and nothing is wrong. It's like getting your teeth cleaned or going for an oil change. It's mental health maintenance. And so we push that very heavily, and we make sure they know that there is no information going back to their chief. It's not a fitness for duty. It's totally confidential. I mean, we're very specific about what that is. And every time I train, every time I
go ahead. No, I just wanted to know if a history of therapy is a reason to turn away an applicant to law enforcement.
No.
Okay.
No, it is not. Okay. It is not. That does not rule you out. It depends on what the diagnosis is. Certain classifications would be ruled out. But by and large, if someone goes in for problem-based solution, correction, depression, most people don't realize you can be on medication. You can't be on benzodiazepams, but you can be on antidepressants. And so we do a lot of education.
I read in preparing for today, I read something that really grabbed me. It said that a police officer could be carrying a wounded child out from some kind of event, and the officer could break their arm, and workers' comp would cover that. But that if an officer is carrying a child out of something and the child dies in their arms, they are not consequently given any kind of mental health counseling to deal with that stress.
That's probably true more than it's not.
Okay.
Because some departments are getting a little more savvy, but the trauma that comes with, and you raise a good point here, maybe not realizing it, but a child death is a very, very big issue. I had an officer tell me in a training last week that in a career of 22 years, he remembers the eyes and face of every dead child. Now, you know, being an officer, they see fatalities all the time, car crashes, murders, hangings, suicide, you name it. And to some degree, they can build up some defense against that. But when it comes to children, not so much. That is something that can really push them over the edge, especially if they have children or if they have a child the same age. Very, very difficult. Mm. So by having a mental health check-in, what you do is you set up a relationship with a mental health provider that you know. And what I tell them is when things go south, and trust me, things will go south in this career, you will know me or someone like me, and you're more likely to pick up the phone and come in than sit on it for 10, 12 years. I've had officers and agents, you know, I have three federal agents in private practice, in addition to officers, who've been sitting on trauma for 12 years, 20 years, that they've never dealt with. And the impact of that on them, their families, the department, the community, people don't realize how extensive it is. And currently, with the anti-cop climate we're dealing with, that just adds to the stress.
Your point's well taken that any numbers that are out there are inaccurate because they're anecdotal. They're not scientific, you know, they're not evidence-based. But they are the only numbers we have. And it's undisputed that in three New York City police department, well, in New York City, three police department officers took their own life within a span of 10 days. That recently. And the question always comes up if there's a contagion. And that goes back to that larger issue of ongoing access to mental health care in a job like a police officer seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
This is what we hope for. And in terms of a contagion, it actually is. What you have is officers or even outside of law enforcement. If somebody has been thinking about suicide, and some people think about it for a long time and some people, you know, act impulsively. But when you see or hear three officers did it and you're an officer who's under tremendous stress and has it on their mind, in a sense, it's an unconscious permission. You know what? This is possible. I could do that. This could end my pain. And actually, social media has made this worse because in the old days, it wouldn't have been out there.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would have known about it. And not that that's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
We still have to deal with the underlying issue of they need mental health care maintenance throughout their career.
Mm-hmm.
Be a healthy officer on the street. And so you're right about stigma.
And then as far as the fact that they have access to firearms, obviously, does that contribute to, well, again, I point well taken that the numbers aren't scientific, they're not evidence-based, be that as it may, I'm going to guess that a lot of them take their lives with a firearm, like most people do.
Yes, and that is true. And it's kind of a tricky piece here because, yes, they have to have their
right.
duty weapon, but it does make it easier. There's not much we can do about that piece specifically except for the mental health check-in, going for therapy, having a department that supports it.
I'm
so that they don't get to that point.
Are there, so there's the departments and there's the federal government that provides funding for departments for all kinds of stuff. And then there are also the police unions, their representation at the bargaining table. Is there a sense that they are aware of this and are pushing for more mental health care for their members?
It goes both ways. The unions can be on either side of it, because if there's mandated check-ins, then they're asking, well, who's going to pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
So then it becomes, okay, so if everyone has to have it, that's going to cost X amount of dollars, and are we sure we want to get behind that?
Mm.
So other unions are fine with it and are supportive. But there are times when the union, I guess you would question, what are your goals here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have collective bargaining. They should be supporting officers, and in a lot of ways they do,
mm-hmm.
and in some ways they do not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that has to change because, frankly, they're taking money out of the officer's paycheck every week. And then when the officer goes back for some representation or some support, some unions are really great and some not so much.
Marla Friedman, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. It's just a pleasure. And please know that get in touch with us at support@badgeoflife.org and for more information on mental health and law enforcement. And we have a little page there where if you have questions or something you'd like to know more about, and let us know and we will get back to you.
We'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. That's Marla Friedman. She is a police psychologist, director of investigations, and board chairman for Badge of Life. That's a nonprofit that offers police suicide statistics or used to training and mental health program resources. Listeners, if you or someone you know is in crisis, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. The website is suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Police can text BLUE, B-L-U-E, or TALK to 741-741 to reach the crisis text line. We'll continue our conversation about the issue of suicide among our police officers. When we return, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The estimated number of U.S. law enforcement officers who died by suicide outnumbered those who died in the line of duty for the third straight year in 2018. It's a growing trend in police departments across the country. A lack of reliable data, though, on suicide in law enforcement and the stigma surrounding it haven't helped. Mike Weinman is a retired Columbus police officer and current director of government affairs for the Fraternal Order of Police of Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Mark DeBona is a board member and public information officer for Blue Help. That's a nonprofit that educates and trains law enforcement on mental health and suicide prevention. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, if you or someone you know is in crisis, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. Please can text BLUE or TALK to 741-741 to reach the crisis text line. There's also another one I've been referred to. It's called safecallnow.org. It is answered by police officers. Mark DeBona, you wrote in 2016 about your struggles with mental health as a police officer. Tell us about your experience and how that relates to what we're talking to.
Well, I went through very difficult times to the point where I tried to commit suicide twice in the same day. It was mostly job-related stress. I've been on the job since 1985, just recently retired 2 months ago, did 33 years on the job, and it was traumatic, very, very, very traumatic. The incidents that I saw, things I witnessed, the pain, the suffering, the homicides, and then on a personal issue also. And also, what a lot of officers or the public is not aware of is the stress you get from within the department, the administration, the co-workers and things like that. And that also builds up to a lot of stress, which leads to PTSD issues.
That makes sense. I mean, everybody has stress at work. But when you layer on the violence and the stressors that a police officer encounters, Mark Wyman, none of this is surprising, really. But the Fraternal Order of Police of Ohio called for post-traumatic stress disorder care for first responders back in February. And I'm wondering what triggered that request and why then, and what kind of response have you got?
Well, actually, we've been working on this legislation for about 8 years now to have the Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation treat PTS as any other on-the-job injury.
Like breaking your arm or getting shot or anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And we've run into stiff opposition.
Why?
Well, we've actually had representatives who don't think it's real, that we're going to somehow play the system.
You mean state lawmakers.
Right, right. We've had the business community come out in strong opposition to it because they want to keep BWC as a physical injury. You know, they don't want to come in 2019.
Because they're paying for a lot of it.
Well, you know, there's actually two pots. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a public sector pot of BWC,
right,
and the private sector pot. But they're worried about the camel's nose under the tent. And then we've had opposition from our employers, you know, the County Commissioners Association, Township Associations. So it's been a long fight. Right now we have it. The language in Substitute House Bill 80, which is the BWC budget.
Okay.
We're hoping that, you know, it's in the Senate now, past the House. We're hoping that that language stays intact because, you know, the Ohio Chamber of Commerce and NFIB have really, really attacked it.
Mark DeBona, do you see similar resistance across the country?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's the elephant in the room, and that's an issue, or a lot of people don't realize that this is a huge, huge issue with law enforcement. Like Mike said, what the opposition I've heard a lot was the fakers. Oh, well, how do we know they're legitimately hurting? Or how do we know they're really telling the truth? There is a lot of opposition. And unfortunately, right now, there's only 13 states that recognize PTSD as an issue in law enforcement, where it could be up to a medical retirement. And unfortunately, I really hate to say this when I have to say this, but you have a lot of chiefs, administrators, and sheriffs who will say, this issue is not an issue in my agency. I've never had a suicide. Well, they don't know what's going on in people's heads as far as the hurting goes. And a lot of cops are afraid to come forward to say they're hurting because of retaliation or being reassigned or looking weak or looking like they can't do the job anymore. And that's really sad. And the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So we've got to get out here full blast and let the public know and let our lawmakers know and also our administrators know this is alive and well in law enforcement.
You know, my last guest from Badge of Life, Marla Friedman, said they've even stopped using statistics because they say they think they're so unreliable because there is no nationwide clearinghouse for the data on this. And that makes me wonder what kind of research has been done anyways on it. Do you know Mark Wyman? You said you've been working on this for 8 years. You must have looked for research to back up your assertions on the issue.
Absolutely. There's been several papers done, you know, academic papers and different studies that have been done. The Department of Justice is working on this right now. There was a federal law passed not too long ago and signed by President Trump that would identify resources for law enforcement officers and do that research. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to that. And you know, like you said, 13 states already recognize it. California has just introduced a bill. Connecticut just passed a bill, you know, to do this, what we're doing, trying to do here in Ohio. And he's right. There's, you know, the stigma to it. And, you know, right now, if, you know, there's a lot of agencies. If you say you're having a problem, they're looking for ways to get rid of you.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the issue of mental health and police officers today because there's reports that the number of police officers who died from suicide over the last 3 years, previous 3 years, exceeded the number that died in the line of duty. But it also deals with mental health and just the dignity of having adequate mental health treatment. So if you don't take that final step and take your life, you may be living with severe depression, PTSD, that kind of a thing. Mark DeBono, what's that like? I mean, what's it like to live, to try to commit suicide twice in one day and just have to live with the pain?
Well, it wasn't easy. I still struggle every once in a while.
Yeah.
Being retired now, the stress has actually gone away, and it's good. But to go to work and not want to be there and know that your agency doesn't support you when you came out with your issues or even the people talking behind your back. And one of the things that somebody said to my agency one time, somebody in high rank said to me, we don't appreciate you being so vocal about your struggles because what if you go out and shoot somebody tonight and now you declare that you have a mental health illness and that's going to be bad for us. Well, that's like a kick in the crotch. And what I mean by that is this. Is they said they pretty much told me that they're worried more so about the agency than they worry about me. And I've heard this from so many officers that have said, I feel my department's washing their hands of me, that they make me feel horrible, and they're trying to push me out. And that is just sad. But to go back up for a second, to go back to going to work and having flashbacks or something triggers you or something to that effect, it's not a healthy working environment. Fortunately, I'm not patting myself on the back when I say that, through therapy, through medication, and the will to survive, I was able to, for the most part, do a fairly decent job. But when I saw the light at the end of the tunnel, when it came towards my retirement, I said, you know something, I could win another 5 years. But I said, it's time to go. It really is. It's time to move on. And now, hopefully, I can get the word out and help my brothers and sisters that are struggling.
You know, Mark Wyman, Mark DeBona brought up an interesting point. You know, a lot of what the Fraternal Order of Police is known for is defending police officers who have incidents in the line of duty, shootings, that kind of a thing. What about that piece that if you walk around and are telling people that you're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or depression or anything, that it weakens a case that you may be trying to build as so it's kind of you're playing two sides of the same coin. How about that?
Yeah, it is difficult. You know, on the one hand, you want to make sure these officers get the help that they need and be able to keep their job. And that's why it's so important. You know, the legislation that we're working on is, you know, it's preventable. You know, they found that, you know, there are things that can prevent, you know, PTS. And if it's identified early on, people can get treatment and continue with a very solid career. And that's our goal. That's what we're hoping to do. And Jay McDonald, our past president, was just in a seminar in Florida where they said, like, once they passed Florida's law, people started taking it seriously. You know, now that they're looking at paying out claims and things like that. So they started putting supervisors in training to be able to identify, you know, before something becomes a problem. And that's really the goal here.
You know, Marla Friedman of Badge of Life also made the observation that more women in the forces and more younger people in the forces are helping change the attitudes about it. Have you found that, Mark Weinman?
You know, it's interesting because police work is generational.
Yeah.
And And I haven't seen that personally, but I've talked to other officers
who have said... Meaning it's in the family,
right.
So they may just be adopting...
Well, no, what I meant was, you know, the officers on the street aren't the same officers,
anyway.
With the training and things like that that you had in the 50s.
Yeah.
Or even the 60s, or the post-Vietnam guys. Those things do change over time.
But the threats to your job and the stigmas don't necessarily...
Well, you know, you've got younger officers coming on, but you have older officers in supervisory positions.
Gotcha.
So, you know, it takes a while for those younger officers to reach that level of supervision where they can, you know, make those changes.
How have you seen the culture change, Mark DeBona?
I've seen a change in a little bit, and I'm going to give you an example. I gave a presentation to a local police department here last week. And the chief of police sat in my presentation for 2 hours, which I thought was great. He then ended up leaving the presentation so the guys and girls can speak freely. But to see that chief of police in the audience and taking notes, that's great. That's a step towards the right direction. And I think also is a lot of older cops are buying into this now, because years ago when I came on the job in 1985, we had a thing called choir practice. We drank our stress away.
Hmm.
And I think now a lot of older cops now are starting to realize that, that's not healthy coping skills by any means. And the younger cops are also, it's now out about suicide. So I think we're like at a halfway point right now, but it begins at the top. That's where it has to be addressed. But on the flip side of that, it also begins at the bottom. Because if you work with somebody that you see that is struggling and you turn your back on that person, or they'll get better in a couple of days, you're not giving that person any justice whatsoever. So it's a 50-50 playing field.
We are going to continue our conversation about mental health, well-being of police officers, and also the issue of suicide. You just heard Mark DeBona. He's a board member and public information officer for Blue Help. It's a nonprofit that educates and trains law enforcement on mental health and suicide prevention. Also with us, Mark Weinman. He's a retired Columbus police officer and current director of government affairs for the Fraternal Order of Police of Ohio. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The estimated number of U.S. law enforcement officers who died by suicide outnumbered those who died in the line of duty for the third straight year in 2018. Some people dispute those numbers. They say they're undercounted. Others say that just the fact of the matter is no one's really sure, because there is no nationwide database on these numbers. We're talking about the stigma surrounding suicide and mental health issues in law enforcement, and how police officers are trained to manage the stress of the job. Still with us, retired Columbus police officer and current director of government affairs for the Fraternal Order of Police of Ohio, Mike Weinman, board member and public information officer for Blue Help. That's a nonprofit that educates and trains law enforcement on the mental health and suicide prevention, Mark DeBona. And if you or someone you know is in crisis, the Fraternal Order of Police and it has a critical incident response service. The number is 1-800-376-6524. And you can also, police can text BLUE or talk to 741-741 to reach the crisis text line for that. And we'll have other numbers up on our website at wosu.org/allsides. I wanted to ask both of you, and maybe start with you, Mike Weinman. You mentioned sheriffs is just as resistant as police chiefs in general when it comes to this issue. And I'm wondering if there's a difference between police chiefs and sheriffs, sheriffs being elected and holding office and having a different kind of relationship with the budgeting and with the reputation and that kind of a thing than police chief who are just they're hired to do the job of taking care of their police force.
Well, that's a very interesting point. I've actually never given it any thought before now. But yeah, you're right. They have to budget. There's a lot of chiefs that do that too, budget, you
they
know,
do,
and
but
townships and smaller agencies and things like that. And yeah, you know, they're looking at the bigger picture. You know, if we start paying for PTS treatment, am I going to be able to buy this cruiser I can put my name on the door with? So yeah, there are those considerations.
And Mark DeBona, it sounds like, the same kind of thing a lot of people who do public service face, you know, teachers, all kinds of people like that. They don't get paid that much. And the budget's always about, you know, boots on the ground, what's happening in the classroom, not necessarily these other kinds of invisible issues.
Right. And I agree. And talk about budgets for a second is every agency has no problem buying a bulletproof vest, gun, taser or stick or whatever to protect our officers physically, but they're not really spending a heck of a lot of money or no money to protect us mentally. And, you know, mental health is just as important as physical health. And to kind of touch on the chiefs and sheriff topic is, sheriffs are, like you said, they're elected officials. They're looking long-term. They're looking for the next re-election. And suicide is not a politically correct topic. And I think somehow that probably affects the way decision-making in sheriffs and chiefs of police also. So it's a tough sell, but we've got to protect our officers.
Has the increasing awareness of the problem of PTSD in particular when it comes to our armed forces helped make any of these arguments easier, Mike Weinman?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We have something like 20 veterans a day committing suicide, and that's really, really put a spotlight on PTS and the mental health issues of these traumatic events. If there's a silver lining in anything, it's the fact that now, you know, Veterans Affairs and things like that are doing the research, you know, and that's where a lot of this research is coming from.
Okay.
A lot of the treatment is coming from through the VA. You know, they're being able to identify these things. And, you know, we've actually had VA doctors come in and testify before committees. And it's pretty remarkable, the work that they're doing.
What do you think, Mark DeBona?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The VA and the military is paving the way for first responders. So I agree with you 100% that the military has taken the ball and ran with it, and it's a team effort, and we got to run with the ball also.
Let's see. Suzanne in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Anne. My question is, I have a son-in-law who is on the Columbus Police Force. This concerns me, naturally, but he's also an older officer. He hasn't been there very long, but he's an older officer. He has a large family support system. I'm wondering if that helps him have, like, more, what can I say, like a vaccination against PTSD. You know what I'm saying? I mean, does that help him in going forward and dealing with potentially serious situations?
Well, I mean, neither of my guests are psychologists themselves, but Mark DeBona, I mean, is there any sense about what the biggest risk factors are when it comes to that level of depression and post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, I can say this. The average age for law enforcement suicide is around 42 years old and 17 years on the job. So, like your other guest said, is he's an older officer, which means he's a little more mature than a younger officer. So that's in my opinion, that's a plus because he's got life experience. And the mental health illness can happen at your first year on the job or your last year on the job, and obviously throughout your job. So you got to wear that suit of armor to protect yourself. If that answers your question.
Okay. Suzanne, thanks for that call. Anybody else, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, antagonism or antipathy toward police officers is not new, but we're at a heightened level in the last 6 or 7 years with the advent of, you know, the smartphones and the cameras on everything and the public social media and public reaction to that. Mike Wineman, do you what is your sense about how much antipathy there is toward police officers in general when you're trying to get something that seems pretty common sense in 2019, that is mental health treatment for trauma and depression?
Well, that's true. I mean, you just look at the incident that happened in Sacramento when the officers are trying to set up a cordon after one of their officers were just ambushed and killed, all the heckling and things that they received on that scene. So there is, you know, segments of society that, you know, no matter what we do, they're not going to like us. I don't know if that reaches to the level of our leaders or our, you know, lawmakers.
About the effect that has?
Yes. So, it'd be interesting to see if, you know, someone finally, you know, study that.
Mm-hmm.
But here you have those Sacramento officers who just watched one of their colleagues die.
Right.
And they're, you know, being harassed and just horrible things being said to them.
And if you're already on the edge.
Hmm. Right. And that, you know, that, and that's one of the, one of the symptoms of PTS is that feeling of hopelessness, that, you know, people just give up, right? And so when you have those incidents happen, you're like, well, what difference am I making here? What's the point of all this?
What do you think, Mark DeBona, as far as the societal attitudes and the impact on police officer mental health?
Well, it's a couple of things. One, the video that just surfaced that the newspaper put on their Facebook page out of St. Louis the other day, that's just absolutely horrific. They're showing a video of an officer that was just shot, and he's laying there dying on the ground. They did not look at the big impact that that had on officers that are struggling with mental health illness, because I had officer call me that when I watched that video, it triggered me. And that's just absolutely horrific that somebody thought that was a good idea to put that on internet of watching a officer die. Mm. That's just, in my opinion, absolutely pathetic. And it's a 50-50 when it comes to the social media. Can it help us? Yeah, absolutely. By promoting and by, not, I don't want to use the word promote, by getting the word out about law enforcement officer mental health. But it can hurt us also. And there's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacks that are not in law enforcement that says, you know, the cop should have shot the gun out of the person's hand, or maybe he spoke nicer, this wouldn't have happened, and on mm-hmm. and on. Law enforcement is a huge, huge stressful job, and it just, everything we do, we're criticized on. You know, you don't hear a lot about the good that we do. You hear more about the bad we do. But only 3% of the law enforcement community nationwide are bad cops. That's like 97% of us are pretty decent people. And I think the public needs to see that also, the good side of it.
Hmm. Trish in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Trish.
Hi, Ann. He just brought up the subject that I wanted to broach. Why don't police departments have some kind of marketing program to show their better side to the public, to increase their relationship with the community to the better, to let them, you know, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I have nothing but respect for policemen, even the one who has to stop me for doing something silly in my car. So why can't we raise other people's opinion of police and therefore help the policeman's mental attitude?
Mark DeBona, do you think that's realistic or what?
I think it's a good thing. I know the agency I worked for before I retired, we were very, very friendly to the public. And on our Facebook page, we put a lot of the good stuff that we did in law enforcement also. So that's a good thing to see what the public see what we do. But the public needs to see also is the struggles that officers go through. But it's a great idea to promote the good things, and I agree with that 110%. I definitely agree with that also. But again, like I said earlier, it's kind of a 50-50. The public also has to see the officers, you know, the officers that what has had the officers, either mentally or physically. And a lot of people don't realize that, the public doesn't realize that you go to a horrific call, and then once we clear that call, we have to go to another call right after that. And then this goes on through your whole shift. And when you're going to have time to take a deep breath and breathe. But in my 33 years of being on the job, it was absolutely incredible to be standing somewhere and somebody come up and shake my hand and say, thank you for what you do. We really support you. That's what it's all about. And that's that is such a natural high when somebody comes up to thank you for what you do. We don't do this job to be patted on the back by any means, but to hear that somebody supports us, that's phenomenal.
But, I mean, Mike Weinman, you do the job because you want to do public service. At least most people, I think, understand that that's why a lot of people get into that line of work in the first place. And so the public perception must have an impact.
Yes, and it's good to see that there's a lot of agencies now that are using social media and things like that to put out some, you know, positive about the agencies. Because it does seem like all you hear about is negatives.
Yeah, man bites dog. I mean,
right, exactly. So, you know, there's some larger agencies and even some smaller agencies have gotten public information officers who have been sending their people through training. You know, Mark Weaver does great crisis communication training all over the state, all over the country, as a matter of fact. And it's good to see that agencies are, you know, taking hold of that and putting those positive things out there.
Chris and Galena, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ann. I'm a retired educator and had a role in coordinating the OPATA Police Academy training that all police officers in Ohio have to undergo. And I just wondered if your panelists are aware of any current preemptive suicide prevention training that is taking place as part of that academy work. And I'll listen to your response off here.
Thank you, Chris. Mike Weinman?
Yeah, we have. We understand that there's that program is progressing. We actually have an FOP member on OPATA, so you know that is a positive.
Mark DeBona, what about nationwide? What kind of training programs does Blue Helps provide?
Well, we provide training for within departments. We will go out to a department and give a 2-hour, 4-hour, 8-hour, whatever it needs to be done to get the word out about mental health in law enforcement and also assist peer support units with that. I'm an academy instructor, and fortunately my academy here in Florida, they allow me to do a 2-hour block to the recruits for police mental health, which is great. And I'm also getting ready to go on the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to be advisor for that, to put that curriculum into law enforcement mandated training at the academy, and which we're really excited about also. So we're climbing up, we're going up a hill, but we're definitely getting there. But Blue Help, we have no issue going to any agency whatsoever and giving our assistance to the best of our abilities. And it's like I said, I did a presentation the other day. This month, the month in June, I've done 9 presentations total for the month of June, all the different with agencies within the area that I live in. And the positive results I'm getting is fabulous.
Well, I want to thank you, Mark DeBona, for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
You're very, very welcome. And thank you for the time. We on behalf of Blue Help, I really, really appreciate it. I also want to thank Mike. I'm also an FOP member for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And very happy that FOP is looking at this, too. And thank you so much.
Mark DeBona, he's a board member and public information officer for Blue Help. That's a nonprofit that educates and trains law enforcement on mental health and suicide prevention. And also Mike Weinman, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mike Weinman is a retired Columbus police officer and current director of government affairs for the Fraternal Order of Police of Ohio. Look for all of the crisis numbers on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Just imparting the FOP's critical incident response service is 1-800-367-6524. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.